Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday morning. In just a moment, we're going to be talking about political cartoons. And our guest is the author of a wonderful book, The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons. Ulysses S. Grant was not the only president who credited cartoonists with helping him win his election. Political bosses and even state legislatures have sought to ban cartoons when they endangered entrenched interests. George Patton once promised to throw the beloved wartime cartoonist Bill Maudlin in jail if he continued to spread dissent, and later he won the Pulitzer Prize. It's a history of political cartoons going way back to the first one in the United States, which is credited to Benjamin Franklin's Join or Die. But there were political cartoons before that, going way back to 1360 BC. We'll talk about all of this. Where do we get the donkey and the elephant? We'll talk about that. Was that the work of political cartoonists? Our guest is the author of The Art of Ill Will. He'll join us in just one moment, and we'll have some fun. But first, we need to tell you that it's our fall membership drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Rhonda Fanning, producer of this program, is here with me, and we are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. You probably know that listener donations are the foundation of our budget, and it's why we're asking for your gift right now so we can have these wonderful conversations. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or call toll-free at 888-202-2552. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Kathleen. We have a lot going on this hour. We have a goal of $3,000 to raise, and we have a challenge grant from existing member who's going to throw in an additional $1,000 once we reach that goal. So be the first to pledge this morning at WPR.org, or you can give us a call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And as a special thank you gift, a special incentive, when you donate today, this hour, $120, you will receive this really priceless book. Some of these cartoons are modern. Some of them are from famous cartoonists like Jules Pfeiffer and others, and some go way, way back. It's interesting to look at the history of political cartooning.
It's a pretty hefty book, right?
It is. It's a wonderful book. Lots of great photos. So for a $120 pledge, we will be so happy to for you to receive a copy of The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons.
It takes a lot of resources to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio is heard all over the state. Some financial support comes from the state government, some from the federal government, and some from corporate underwriters. But I don't know a lot of people know this, but one-third of WPR's budget comes from listeners, from you. That's why we're here today, to ask for your support.
And we need your help during these drives to help keep our service strong. We know that you value Wisconsin Public Radio, and it brings a great deal to your life. I know it brings a great deal to our lives. Rhonda and I talk about the shows when we're off the air and about all the ideas that our guests have given us during the course of, well, many years now. Please show how much you value it with your pledge of support. It's very easy. Go online at WPR.org or give us a call toll-free. The number is 888-202-2552, and you'll be doing your part to support the programming. Again, The Art of Ill Will. Those of you into politics, and that's you, I know, will love this book. For a $120 pledge as a special incentive, we are happy to send it to you.
And help us reach that $3,000 goal this hour so we get that challenge grant of an additional $1,000.
And we are we don't usually give our opinions on the air, but when we talk about Wisconsin Public Radio, we make an exception. We believe that no one who practices radio journalism, nobody practices it the way that we do. You get an hour-long conversation, substantive conversation, and we strive for and achieve, I believe, the highest standards. Report the substance, the spirit of the stories. We ask you to take a moment to voice your opinion right now by making a pledge of support. Donate to us by calling 888-202-2552 or going online to WPR.org.
Just as your computer needs updating for continued productivity, WPR's technology also needs to stay current. We strive to use the best, most up-to-date technology to provide you with a clear signal, statewide news coverage, a useful website at WPR.org, where you can also pledge right now, where you can find the schedules, live streams of our programming, and much, much more.
So you are asked to contribute to us this hour. Again, we have that thank you gift of $120, and a lot of what goes on here is behind the scenes. It costs money, certainly. Your support helps us stay current so that the programs that you depend on are brought to you seamlessly, which they are day after day after day. Again, it's $120. Okay, and you receive for that
a copy of the book. You'll also get a Wisconsin Public Radio membership card for those two-for-one restaurant deals and arts and cultural events throughout the state of Wisconsin. And you will help us also reach that challenge grant this hour, our goal of $3,000.
Thanks very much, Rhonda. We'll talk to you a little bit later. We are going to speak with the author of The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons. Donald Dewey is our guest. He's the author of a lot of books, including biographies of actor James Stewart and Marcello Mastroianni, and The Tenth Man, The Fan in Baseball History, which was awarded the Nelson Algren Prize for Fiction. This book has a lot of rare photographs that go back to a long, long time ago, the first American political cartoon composed by Benjamin Franklin. And it takes us through political cartoons for a long period of time. The title of the book comes from something that Jules Pfeiffer once said: outside of basic intelligence, there is nothing more important to a good political cartoonist than ill will. And it looks at a sorry history of America's cartooning story on ethnic and racial stereotyping, vile treatment reserved for Native Americans. It is presidential cartooning and cartooning about war, and how important this really has been during American political history. Well, welcome your on-air phone calls as well for our guest, and you can reach us by calling 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And Donald, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Yeah, it was great to read this during the middle of a political season, because you don't realize how far back this goes. Could we start with the donkey and the elephant? Were those the result of political cartoonists?
In one sense, they were, yes. A lot of people attribute both animals as symbols to Thomas Nast, the 19th century cartoonist, but that's not really true. The donkey had been used as a symbol for the Democrats long before Nast. Nast popularized it, but did not coin it. The elephant is a fascinating story, on the other hand. It became a symbol of the Republican Party thanks to Nast, but also thanks to a great hoax in the 19th century. There was a newspaper that came out, the New York Tribune, which for months had been absolutely furious about the fact that Philadelphia was able to get a brand new zoo and New York could not get a brand new zoo. And around the same time, there was also a rumor going around that Ulysses S. Grant was about to run for a third term, which was spurious for the most part. But in any case, one day the Tribune decided to draw attention to the fact that New York did not have the zoo that it needed, and this would be in Central Park at the time. It printed on the front page this completely fallacious story about how the animals in the present zoo had all escaped.
Oh.
And how they were running around the streets of Fifth Avenue and in Midtown.
Oh.
And they had this, and at the bottom, just kind of like some of your listeners may remember the great story of Orson Welles and the invasion from Mars in 1939, where there were disclaimers even before that. But also in this case, there was at the bottom of the newspaper, the front page, this tiny, tiny little line saying this is all fiction. Well, of course, nobody paid any attention to that. And they all said, oh, my God, these animals are running around the middle of New York. Well, Nast decided that hoax was the same as the hoax about Grant running for president again. And so he, in one of his drawings, combined the two stories and the elephant was center in this drawing, and it was shown kicking at people. And he just put that this was the Grant rumor on it. And from that point on, the elephant was always associated with the Republicans.
That is a fascinating story.
Yeah, I mean, it, like some of this stuff is really, really funny.
Yeah, it sure is. So you credit, at least in America, the first political cartoon, Benjamin Franklin's Join or Die?
Join or Die was a symbol of, obviously your listeners don't have it in front of them, but Joy or Die was a kind of snake, and it was a snake that was kind of like folded onto its coils. And Franklin did this in an attempt to rally the colonies. This would be, we're talking about 1750-something, it's 57. And at the time, the snake, we have, of course, all these negative connotations of the snake today, but back then, the snake was a very positive symbol insofar as its number one quality, according to the metaphors, was the fact that even though it might be cut up during the day, it had this magic quality during the night of being able to rejoin itself. And so the next morning it would wake up completely whole again. And so what Franklin did was he showed this snake, which was cut up, and it was an appeal to the other colonies to please get together here. We must make an alliance if we want to ward off a threat by the Iroquois Indians. Now, this, for the most part, most people agree this was the very first political cartoon. There are a couple of other people who say another thing by Franklin was, but for the most part, the consensus is around this one. Well, whether or not it was 100% agreed that it was the first political cartoon, it was certainly the first political cartoon that did not succeed in its aim, because once Franklin went to this assembly to talk to all of these representatives of Delaware and Maryland, and the other colonies, he could not get any unity whatsoever, because each of the colonies was absolutely suspicious that any kind of, you know, throw it in together, all for one and one for all, would water down their own power. And, of course, the English, who, of course, were governing the entire country at the time, they wanted to hear nothing about colonies getting together. So the first political cartoon was an absolute failure.
You mentioned Thomas Nast. Let's talk a little bit more about him. And you mentioned Grant. Also, Lincoln, you write, gave credit to Nast, and particularly this very moving, I don't think I've ever seen this cartoon from 1864, mocking the peace platform of the Democrats in their election year attempt to dump Lincoln for George McClellan, and also the drawings that he did from the battlefield of the Civil War, the Compromise with the South cartoon, which is very moving.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Nast, number one, is certainly, and there are both good and bad things about this, Nast remains, even today, probably the most successful political cartoonist of all time.
Really?
I mean, you've had particular pieces more recently by people like Herblock or Jules Pfeiffer, whom you mentioned before, and a couple of other people. But in terms of influence on the entire genre, I don't think there's any question that Nast was the most important. There are a couple of reasons for this, and some of them actually stem from even our own faulty memories. Thomas Nast worked for a magazine called Harper's Weekly, which was the forerunner of the Harper's magazine that people can get today, the monthly magazine, and also connected back to the days of HarperCollins Publishing and things like that. It was a major publisher at the time. It was also an absolutely Catholic-hating publication.
Hmm.
They did nothing but, I mean, for instance, the Harper brothers made their money originally by putting out these absolutely scurrilous magazines with nuns knifing priests and things like that.
Oh, my gosh.
But at the same time, they also had the money to set themselves up as kind of like the publishing establishment in New York. Publishing establishment at the time meant Republican, white, Protestant, or as we used to call them, WASPs. And anything to do with Catholicism was absolutely no-go for the Harpers or for any publication. And Nast, even though he himself had been born a Catholic over in Europe, he himself became their kind of chief pen against anything that smacked of Catholicism, anything that obviously smacked of Democratic Party politics, anything that, in short, oppose the interests of the Harpers. And he had a very convenient target at the time, one that I'm sure we've all read about when we went to grammar school and read our history books, and that was Boss Tweed, the Democratic Tammany Hall leader who ran New York. And Tweed was infamous as being, you know, the ultimate symbol of greed and avarice and things like that. But Tweed also had the problem that he needed his votes. And so where did he get his votes from? He got them from the Irish immigrants. Who were the Irish? The Irish were Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you more or less had this setup of, on the one side, you had Nast and the Republican Protestants, and their establishment. On the other side, you had Tweed and the Irish immigrants who were Catholics and who were Democrats. And so there was never going to be any love between these two sides. And Nast dedicated himself to absolutely destroying Boss Tweed. And it was as a result of this that you have probably the two greatest cartoons of the 19th century. One, the Tammany Hall tiger depicted in the middle of the Roman Colosseum chewing up the voter.
Mm.
And that is one of the drawings in the book. The second one is another great one. It's called Teacher on the Ganges, and it shows a public school teacher protecting, holding a Bible and protecting his children from these crocodiles that are advancing toward him. And the genius of Nast was that the heads of these crocodiles are all shaped like Catholic bishops' mitres.
Oh, my.
And so that this was an attack, not just on Tweed, but it was an attack on Catholicism. It was an attack on the Democrats, and indirectly it was an attack on the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you can see also in other parts of the book, Nast loved nothing so much as drawing caricatures of the Irish.
Let's welcome phone calls for you. We have a lot of people calling in already. Our guest this hour is the editor and author. It's a very interesting history he's written about American political cartoons. The book is The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons, and several that he has mentioned are, of course, included in this book that goes back in American history, and it's a fascinating history of what Herb Bloch has said, a special prod, a reminder to public servants that they are public servants. We'll also be looking at the sorry history on ethnic and racial stereotyping, which is a sorry history, and welcome your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now for Donald Dewey, starting with Helen from Sheboygan County. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Kathleen. I have an idea for a political cartoon, and I don't know any cartoonists. So I want to share it with you. It's a drawing of Dick Cheney, his head, and on his forehead is a sign that says, Mission Accomplished. And that's all.
Thanks, Helen, for the call. Donald, you want to respond to that?
I don't know what to say. I'm not quite sure what
What's the significance of it, Helen?
Well, because everything he planned to ruin our Constitution and our has come. He had his meetings with the energy people in the beginning of the term.
Oh, that, yes, that definitely.
And he has accomplished everything that he could have wanted.
Not quite. We're not all in jail yet.
Thanks, Helen, very much for the call. She brings up an interesting point, though. She has the idea, and I mean, she's got the picture, and do political cartoons start with a philosophy, with an idea, and then most cartoonists try to work around, or do they think in terms of pictures right away?
No. Every cartoonist has always attested to the fact that the idea is 75% of the job, that the drawing is actually the least of it. And they have all been very emphatic about this. In fact, you'll find that relatively few, maybe Steve Breen around today, Ted Rawl, Pfeiffer, very few of them actually have formal art training. They did not go to art schools and the like. Nast did, in fact. Not only what did was Nast praised by people who looked at his cartoons here, but he also had a tremendous influence, if you can believe it, on Van Gogh and a lot of 19th century painters in Europe.
Oh, my. What was the influence?
The influence was just simply the meticulousness of his drawing and his use of shadowing. And many of the 19th century artists explicitly praised him.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the idea, get back to your original question, no, the idea is always the idea. In fact, as the title of the book says, The Art of Ill Will, it's got to be a very, very specific and emphatic political position. People who try to, we had this controversy a few weeks back, I don't know if you heard about it, but about the cover of The New Yorker, about the Obama cover.
Oh, sure.
Well, in a real sense, that was not a political cartoon, because a political cartoon does not leave it open for you to say, well, maybe it means this or maybe it means that. No, a political cartoon should be very clear about what it means. If it wants to say something on behalf of Obama or against McCain, it should be very clear that it says that and not be ambiguous the way that New Yorker cartoon was.
Mm-hmm.
And that is always what Pfeiffer has meant about ill will. I mean, do not be afraid of saying. Now, unfortunately, there have been forces in recent years which have worked against this, and I'm not just talking about the traditional classic forces of, you know, publishing that doesn't want to lose advertising. One of the, for instance, great successes of cartoonists in recent years has been through what is called syndication. That means that you don't just do your cartoon for your local newspaper, but you do it for a syndicate that then distributes the same cartoon in Oregon as appears in Maine. Well, the problem with, even though this brings a lot more money to the cartoonist, the problem is that the people in Oregon don't really care what the problems of, you know, Plymouth, Massachusetts are. And so this makes for a lot more generic kinds of cartoons, cartoons that can have the same kind of understanding and comprehension in one part of the country as the other. And the more generic, of course, you become, the less passionate you're more likely to become about a given issue. And so this has not worked to the benefit of the, let's say, the asperity of cartoons. Another thing that has not, of course, is the winnowing number of newspapers.
Yes.
The more newspapers close down, the fewer jobs there are, and the more steel that a publisher can have in telling a cartoonist to toe the line he wants him to toe. You don't like doing it the way I want it. There are plenty of other cartoonists out in the street. You know, get lost. And so, none of these trends has been particularly beneficial to the cartoonist.
Mm-hmm. What about during wartime? Have cartoonists, editors, and newspaper people have been criticized for not giving us all sides of possible intervention, certainly during the Iraq War, newspapers were criticized for not looking at this. What about cartoonists? Are they more reluctant to take on the government during wartime?
Very much so. In fact, that's a very good question. And it's actually a very sad history. During each and every war, with rare exceptions, the cartoonists have toed the line. There are, as I believe you mentioned, there are hundreds of cartoons in The Art of Ill Will, but there's been one which has absolutely dismayed people. And I know it even before I show it to people or before people open the book. There's going to be one which is absolutely going to dismay people. And it's a cartoon which is called The Fifth Column. And it shows, in 1942, it shows Japanese American lined up to pick up their grenades and their bombs in San Francisco.
Mm.
This came out 2 days after all the Japanese Americans were interned.
Mm.
And the cartoon itself is just typical garbage, as a lot of the cartoons at the time were. But what is dismaying to most people is who did it. And the artist in question was Theodore Geisel, otherwise known as Dr. Seuss.
Oh, my goodness.
And unfortunately, that was not atypical. I mean, this was also at the time that, that Geisel was doing things like, he was the only one at the time who was doing cartoons about how women and and African Americans were receiving lower wages for doing the same jobs in factories and war plants and things. This was the one area, however, that he was just as blind as everybody else. I mean, let's be patriotic, wave the flag, and in some cases that meant, you know, being totally disparaging to ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm. Do you, I somehow missed that. I read the book, but I missed that. Do you know what page that's on?
You can look in the back.
Okay.
The Theodore Geisel.
Okay. All right. I will. We're speaking this hour with the author of The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons. Oh, I got it. Wait. I'm on the air right now. I have to look at the book at another time. And we are welcoming your phone calls on air. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. And we just want to remind you that we are in a pledge drive, and for a $120 pledge, we're very happy to send you as a gift of appreciation, The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons, which you'll find particularly interesting during, well, it's always interesting, but during this election season. Joining me in the studio, Rhonda Fanning, producer of this program, and we're here to ask your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Make a donation by going to WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552. Hi, Rhonda. This is a great book. This is really a fascinating conversation. I'm so wrapped up in it, I forget I'm on the radio.
Well, you can sit there and read, and I will tell everyone
all right,
about
thanks.
The goal this hour of $3,000. And again, as Kathleen mentioned, this wonderful book can be yours if you pledge this hour only. And at that $120 level, you'll receive a copy of the book, which is pretty hefty, and also get that Wisconsin Public Radio membership card. The goal is $3,000. We're not quite halfway there, so call now at 888-202-2552, or you can log on to WPR.org. And once we reach that $3,000 goal, we'll receive that extra $1,000 from an existing member through our challenge grant.
I mean, where do you learn about how we got that? Wasn't that a fascinating story about how we got the elephant for the symbol of the Republicans? That was just, you don't hear anything like that
That's
anywhere.
Right.
We learn things all the time, single day.
The Ideas Network certainly keeps you informed. Listening to public radio gives you a front row seat to the world,
mm-hmm.
national and state events. All you need is an ear for a radio and our to the radio to learn something new.
One of the reasons I love my job, and I think Rhonda as well, is that it facilitates learning every day. It's lifelong learning. Every day we learn something new from Wisconsin Public Radio, which is so wonderful.
Makes and it's tuition-free.
Hey!
Yeah. You decide how much you want to pay for this great programming, and this hour we're asking for that $120 level. That can be, you know, $10 a month. It could be all at one time. You could have it electronically drafted from your checking account. Again, that goal this hour is $3,000, and we are still sitting at about halfway there, so we'd really like to get that challenge grant of that extra $1,000 this hour.
We'd like to thank Philip from Crystal Lake, Illinois, where my Aunt Margaret and Uncle Dan O'Leary lived for many, many years. You have fine programming. Thanks, Philip. Margaret. Oh, and that was Aunt Margaret, too. This is prophetic.
Margaret's been listening since 1947.
Oh, my gosh,
she says
Margaret?
Wisconsin Public Radio is a constant companion. It's informative. And she would not be the same person without it.
Oh, Margaret.
I'm
You're
sure
near
many
and dear
people
to our
feel
hearts.
The same way
they
as Margaret
sure do.
Does.
Thank you. And also new members. Some of you weren't around in 1947. You are also important to Wisconsin Public Radio. The more people who support us, and that means the more stable our financial situation, the better able we are to withstand the economic ups and downs, which we're living through right now.
Certainly. So if you've never contributed before, know that your new membership will keep Wisconsin Public Radio the same strong, reliable service that you depend on each and every day. So become a member today by logging on to WPR.org or calling us toll-free at 888-202-2552.
And just a reminder that we have a $3,000 goal. We're not quite halfway there yet, and so we'd like to get there to $3,000. We're very happy to send you, and this only happens this hour, and I guarantee you, you're going to love this book, The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons. So for $120 pledge, Donald Dewey's book, and
You'll get it
have,
in the mail.
Have even more fun this political season. Thanks, Rhonda. Mm-hmm. We're welcoming phone calls for Donald this hour, 800-486-8655. And we go to Robert from Lancaster next. Hi, Robert.
Hello. I'm trying to track down some cartoonists that were with the Chicago Tribune in the early and mid-1960s. And one of them, he had a trademark cartoon. It was kind of a middle-aged businessman, had a little cookie duster mustache, and he's reading the headlines, and he jumps up and he says, "It makes me so blamed mad." And that appeared about once a month. They would just change the headlines on his newspaper. Huh. Now, does that ring a bell with you?
I'm not from Chicago, so I'm not really all that familiar with the local cartoonists. But I'm sure the newspaper would be able to tell you.
Right. I wonder if the internet is so, and I guess it depends on the newspaper, is so highly evolved that he might be able to get some of those online. Do you think, Donald, or not?
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. In fact, if he would go to the American Society of Editorial Cartoonists.
Oh.
And just ask the way he just asked it then, I'm sure somebody there would be able to help him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because one of their other features, they would make things really obvious. There'd be, they'd have this guy, and he'd always be John Q. Public.
Oh, John Q. Public, yeah, that is a famous character that was syndicated. And it was actually a very, very, compared to some of the other symbols, it was a fairly bland character. In fact, the period you're talking about, the 60s and the 50s, more like the 50s, it was not a great period for cartoonists in general. There was a kind of at the time, you remember, there was the Red Fear that was going on, the Red Scare, and nobody really wanted to step up and say, let's do something here which will stir the waters. The John Q. Public was done by a gentleman for the Chicago Daily News, named Shoemaker, Vaughn Shoemaker. But there were other characters, that was also the time of the popularity of John Q. Taxpayer, and there were various names like that which were meant to represent every man.
Thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Ed from West Allis. Hi, Ed.
A couple things this morning. We did have someone stand up in the 1950s. Which was Walt Kelly. I know that.
Oh, well, Walt Kelly and Herb. Yeah, I didn't meet everybody. Photo.
You know, he had Joe McCarthy as a bobcat that entered the swamp.
Right.
In 1954, and how.
Well, it was actually before Kelly. Kelly did it, of course, in for the most part in Pogo, but Herb Lock and Paul Conrad were probably Conrad in California were probably the two who were most emphatic about McCarthyism.
And Kathleen mentioned political cartoonists during the war, and we certainly in Wisconsin, during World War One, right after the Senate vote on Good Friday, 1917, that next day there were a number of pictures that had Senator La Follette receiving the Iron Cross from the Kaiser.
Mm-hmm.
And also having Senator La Follette put on a pike helmet.
Oh, really?
The other two things, we have a labor cartoonist here in this part of the world in southeastern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, Kopecky. That's his general name, that is just wonderful for the labor cartoons that...
Mm-hmm.
He draws and doesn't get a lot of national attention. He worked for the Racine Labor Times before it folded.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, since you have a baseball connection, I have to bring up Willard Mullins and the whole thing with the Brooklyn Bum and that wonderful artwork. And this was very well documented in 1957 when Brooklyn was going through its tragedy of losing the Dodgers and how that bum... Just,
oh, I was there.
Oh, were you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Thanks, Ed, very much for your call. Let's go back a little bit and talk
well,
about...
I would,
I'm sorry.
Just let me... the Willard Mullen connection is not quite accurate. There is... Willard Mullen was a cartoonist, and he was a wonderful cartoonist, but to call him an editorial political cartoonist would be stretching it. In fact, there are a lot of people who absolutely refuse the definition of political cartoonist, and one of them, believe it or not, is Gary Trudeau, Doonesbury. And in a sense, he's right. Whenever you have cartoonists who do the strips every day and have recurring characters, in one sense, they are doing the opposite of what a political cartoonist should do. Even though there's something, you know, hilarious about the various Bushes and Gingriches, et cetera, or the Ronald Reagan talking brain or whatever it was, the fact of the matter is the real aim of a political cartoonist is to denounce something graphically which stops existing because the denunciation has started. When you bring back characters like this over and over and over again, you are kind of doing the same thing. Let me skip to an exact parallel. Robert Altman, the film director, was once asked what he thought of MASH, the weekly television series with Alan Alda, because Altman, of course, had done the film with Donald Sutherland and Elliot Gould. And Altman said that there's no denying that the television series was far more explicitly sardonic about Korea, that there were better lines, better cracks, and things like that. But that, in a sense, because it was a weekly appointment for America, that it took on a kind of comfort zone for people, that the movie, being a kind of anarchic disputation on what was going on in Korea, never had. People went into the movie, they saw it for 2 hours, they saw all this chaos going on, and they walked out. The weekly television series, where you could see and you could kind of take on the wounds of Korea in the same way that you could take on the Jeffersons or anything else, that this was a comforting thing. And that ultimately it really was just Dr. Kildare at the 38th parallel. And Altman had a point, because the same thing is true of political cartoons. If you have recurring characters who keep coming back, you start looking forward to them. Let's have more of this Bush character. Let's have more of Cheney and things like this. And so they kind of are being counterproductive to their own declared purpose at that point.
And thanks very much for the call. Let's talk a little bit about Richard Nixon. It's interesting that when you think about him, sometimes you think about him as a cartoon image. You write about Herb Locke and him giving Nixon the reputation as a Skeno schemer with frail shoulders, angry jowls, and a 5 o'clock shadow, which is really a very big part of the image of him and the visual language of the 20th century. So we think about a politician in terms of perhaps Herb Locke's image of him.
Very much so, and in fact, I don't think to this day all the attempts of Bush to rival it or not, there's probably never been a president as widely caricatured as Nixon. Herb Locke was certainly the most pronounced, but again, Conrad in California, he was actually, believe it or not, maybe simply because it was too obvious to put Herb Locke on the list, Conrad was the only cartoonist who made Nixon's enemies list. There were just about any cartoonist who had a pen in the 50s, 60s, and 70s did Nixon at some point or other, and none of them was flattering. But the Nixon question also brings up something, and that is relates also to the title of the book or the subtitle. When I called it The Story of American Political Cartoons rather than The History, there was a purpose behind it, because usually when you see the word history on something, you kind of say, oh, well, this is where I'm going to go and get all the answers. Instead, I wanted to ask two questions, and to me, the word story conveyed that much more clearly than the word history did. And one of the questions was, how influential exactly have political cartoonists ever been? Now, for the most part, you'll hear organizations like the one we mentioned before, like the American Association of Editorial Cartoonists, there's no question. Of course, we have had an influence. At one time or another, five states tried to ban cartoonists as traitors. Okay. And this is true. New York, Pennsylvania, California, Alabama, and Indiana, at one time or another, did indeed table legislation in their state assemblies to get rid of political cartoonists because they were considered treasonous. And this is, of course, yes, this is certainly would seem to be a symbol of how influential cartoonists have been. But at the same time, in all five cases, each of these bills was tabled by a politician, obviously a politician who had been absolutely attacked by cartoonists, but by a politician also who had been elected or reelected despite the opposition of these cartoonists. And so these attempts to outlaw them as institutionally repressive, and it may have made these people personally vindictive, but it did not make them electoral losers.
We're speaking this hour with the author of The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons, Donald Dewey. We'll take another phone call in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Donald Dewey, our guest. We go to Jim from Salt Lake City next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, I have one question, and I'm sorry I don't know the cartoonist's name because when they sign it, it's not always legible. But I think he's a national syndicate. I remember seeing him for a long, long time. And in the bottom corner, there's always a person giving commentary or the conscience, and he's always talking to another small person. They have like a bulbous nose. Do you know who I'm referring to?
To tell you the truth, that's a motif used by many cartoonists.
Oh, man.
I'm really not sure which one you are referring
to. But how did that first start of having... you know, like the politicians give their speech and the little person in the corner speak. How did that become developed? Because it doesn't seem like very many of them use it, and I guess it is common in the past, but I haven't seen very many other cartoonists use that.
I don't know. It strikes me as just a device to just kind of distinguish. One of the more revealing remarks was by a cartoonist, Steve Breen, who said a few years ago, he said, you know, the fact of the matter is the cartoonists, political cartoonists today, you take off their names and you don't, you know, tell what newspaper they're writing from. And one is basically indistinguishable from the other. And this is one of the most accomplished political cartoonists saying this. And the fact is that, yes, this is true. I mean, you would be able to recognize a Doug Marlette of the people working around today, or maybe an Oliphant or a Ted Rall, people like that. But when you think of how many are actually working, I mean, we're talking about still, even despite the closure of newspapers and things, you're still talking about thousands of people. And the fact of the matter is that maybe 30 or 40 have distinct styles. And so if they can't do it in their drawings, if there's no obvious distinction of one from the other, a lot of them have these little devices like the one you're describing, which would kind of make it clear, oh, this is John Smith as opposed to John Jones.
Donald, we have to go. Thank you so much for being with us and for doing this book. It's just wonderful. Great contribution to this political season.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. Donald Dewey, the book is The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons. What we didn't get to, and I wish we had, was the sorry history of cartoons looking at race in this country and ethnicity and how they have treated Native Americans. You'll have to go to the book for this. And a profession that's dominated by men, but there were a small handful of women who managed to break into the male-only profession, but it was about the 19th Amendment on women having the right to vote. Most men were pretty skittish, the political cartoonists, about allowing us the right to vote. So you'll have to go to the book for that, and I hope you will. Joining me in our studio is Rhonda Fanning, who's the producer of this program. And we're here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio because your contribution makes the work of WPR possible. Thanks, Rhonda, so much. What a great book. What a lot of fun this was. And it's amazing how much you can learn about history through political cartoons, too.
Certainly a reflection of, I guess, the society and what they're going through. This hour, let me just say this, that we are getting closer and closer to our goal. We still have about $1,300 to raise towards that $3,000 goal so we can get the extra $1,000 challenge grant from an existing member. And that can be done with pledges from you. For that $120, at that $120 level, you will get a copy of Donald's book, The Art of Ill Will, and you can see these cartoons for yourself that Kathleen and Donald had just talked about for the last hour. So call now, 888-202-2552, or you can log on to our website at WPR.org.
And you know that conversations like the one we just had with Donald Dewey are indicative of the quality of guests that we have, thanks to Rhonda's work and Carmen Jackson, who helps out with this program. Rhonda works very, very hard every day to come up with really the perfect guest. What more perfect during the political season than somebody who has a different slant and a historic slant on political cartoons? The Art of Ill Will, Donald Dewey, who knows the history and gave us information. It's worth a pledge just so you can tell that story about where we got the elephant. That's a great story, right? It's worth your pledge. And you can receive the book just this hour, $120 pledge. Again, the number is 888-202-2552, or go to WPR.org and pledge online.
Make your contribution at WPR.org to help us pay for this great programming that you hear each and every day on Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution in any amount will give us the resources we need to make things happen here at the station. Or you can call in your pledge right now. Dial toll-free 888-202-2552. Either way, you'll be doing your part to support the programming you count on every day on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
We know that you're an intelligent audience. We hear that, and you hear that again and again. So do I.
Certainly from
our
the guests.
Certainly
and from the listeners and callers.
Yes. Yes, all the time. Thank you for your intelligence and for being so involved. And you appreciate the intelligent conversation, I think, that we have on the Ideas Network. So please consider making a pledge. Again, you can pledge securely online at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552.
That's right. And if it fits into your budget, consider a gift of $1,000. Your generous leadership contribution of $83 a month, and that can be taken out of your checking account automatically. That's $1,000 over a year's time will help bring WPR programming to those who can't afford to give. Make your contribution in any amount at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
It's one source where you can get in-depth reports. You can get information about things you didn't even know you wanted to know about. It's real people talking about real things. They talk about musicians in Iraq, you know, rock and roll in Iraq, or in Pakistan or in India. There's no other source like this. What we have here is so wonderful, and I don't think a lot of people realize it. I'm John Ink from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is my source for a clear view of the world.
You'll feel great each time you turn on the radio after you have made your pledge. And you do, and you contribute to something you feel that you have more at stake. You'll have the satisfaction of knowing that you help make this service possible every day. We are listener supported, and an important part of our pledge comes from listeners just like you. So please pledge now online, WPR.org, or toll free 888-202-2552. And you will feel good all year long.
That's
when you
right.
turn on
I
the radio.
I always equate the feeling that you get when you pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio to the feeling that you get coming out of the voting booth after you've just
yes.
voted.
Right.
So that same kind of feeling, and it takes about the same amount of time, just a couple of minutes. Well, I guess depending on the line at the polls. But there is never a line at WPR.org. Just a couple of clicks, and you can submit your pledge. And at that $120 level, this hour, you will get a copy of the book, Wisconsin Public Radio membership card, and you'll have that great feeling that you helped us reach our goal and we receive that extra $1,000 from our existing member.
And we are pretty close to our goal of $3,000. We haven't reached it yet, but if we do, we get an extra $1,000.
That's right.
Which
a couple
a
of
thing.
More calls, and that call can come from you in these last couple of minutes, and you can keep pledging through the news. You can do that in one or two ways. Go to our website, WPR.org, or give us a call at 888-202-2552.
And I feel like I know many of you pretty personally from having talked to you for over 15 years now. I know that you are going to love this appreciation gift, The Art of Ill Will, The Story of American Political Cartoons. It's really historic. It teaches you about political history. The selection of cartoons is fantastic. Some of them really get to you, as only political cartoons do. They stay with you. They stay in your mind for a long time. $120 pledge just this hour. We'll be very happy to send you this as a thank you. Again, 888-202-2552 is the number to call.
That's right, or you can go onto our website at WPR.org, and what a better time to pick up this book that kind of lays down the history of political cartoons in this probably, well, in my lifetime, certainly the most historic of campaigns and elections. So a perfect gift at only $120. You'll receive that when you call 888-202-2552. Just a couple of minutes left, but you can keep pledging through the news if you want a copy of Donald Dewey's The Art of Ill Will.
Thanks so much, Rhonda.
Thanks
for producing this program and doing such a terrific job with production. Thanks to John Treader, our wonderful volunteer who has been here for years and is a great person to talk to in the morning before you talk to us. And we're okay, too.
Yeah.
We have news coming up, and we'll return with Nancy Pearl. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.